Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome in to another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh. And Scott, we are sitting here talking about golf because it's been too wet to go play golf.
It's been tough. I will say I did get out and play a couple of rounds over the weekend, and certainly the previous Friday, the weather was fantastic and great. And then on Sunday, it was just downright awful and nasty. So you saw a lot of different conditions.
What I'm finding, the golf courses I played both at Mather and at Bartley Cavanaugh in the last couple of weeks. The greens at these golf courses are really in great shape right now.
Yeah.
Some fairways obviously drain better than others. It depends on how the course was designed and whether you have standing water in the fairways and whether the fairways are even growing. But certainly we recognize it's still winter here in Northern California, even though the calendars may tell us that we're spring, but I think we just have to recognize those are the conditions, and if we're going to play, you play in them. Tom Morton is going to be with us today to talk a little bit about what it's like to play in the rain and how we can make that experience a little bit more enjoyable.
Yeah, no question about it. We'll talk to him about what some of the keys are to being successful. I will say personally, I think the biggest thing is making sure you have some good rain gloves because, you know, in the rain, you're losing your grip. And that's the one thing over the weekend that was so frustrating for me is actually being able to take a backswing, come back through and not feel like I'm losing my club in that process.
Yeah, if you've never played with rain gloves, you have no idea how much they help the game. With a rain glove, you actually wet them to make sure that the gripping power actually works. So you play with wet gloves, and you're absolutely right. You play with two gloves, a left and a right, and once they're wet, it is so much better than playing with a regular golf glove that will get wet. And, you know, whether you have an extra glove and you try to make that one dry, it's pretty hard to make that happen. So a good pair of rain gloves is a really good investment.
Yeah, definite must.
So you're going to go back and play in the rain this weekend? What do you think?
If I can get out, I'll play. The conditions won't stop me.
I like your can-do attitude. As we've talked about, as we welcome people into the show, you know, we certainly hope that low handicap players enjoy listening, but we also hope that recreational players and certainly players that maybe haven't even ever picked up a club, you know, find the show interesting. I've said so many times that that golf is a game. You know, we tend to forget that as we get involved in maybe the competition or, you know, trying to shoot a score better than our buddy shot, or if you have the right mental attitude, it certainly remains a game. But for some, it becomes a little more work than game. And I would argue that that at its core, it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. And I think the synthesis of this show is to create the notion that it is fun and have people understand that.
Yeah, that's the main thing. I mean, again, I think the thing you and I appreciate it so much about the game is you get a chance to be outside. It's good exercise, your multiple hours with friends. All of those things are things sometimes we take for granted, but really in our busy lives, we don't have many opportunities to do that. And that's the real value of it for me.
On the show today, as we mentioned, Tom Morton, the PGA Director of Development at Hagen Oaks. Tom is a really interesting guy. He's one of the area's most incredible instructors. He is nationally recognized for junior instruction, and he sits on a couple of advisory boards for some of the equipment manufacturers. And he's very soft spoken, but what I find is if you listen, especially between the lines, I've found so much good information out of his time being on the air with us that I find myself being on the golf course and remembering, no, I don't want to do that. Remember what Tom said I should be doing.
No doubt. And I'm looking forward to talking to his conversation about the USGA and the golf balls, because I know he has some very pointed opinions about it.
Yeah, the USGA and the RNA have decided that the golf ball goes too far and they're going to save the game by rolling it back. Well, we'll talk to Tom and see what he thinks, as you suggested. Bobby Naima. Bobby is the Northern California rep for Cobra Golf. Will also be with us. Bobby's been on the show before, and we're going to talk about Cobra's new offerings this year in their driver fairways, hybrids, and irons as well. The their club is called the Aerojet this year, and there's I think three different versions of the Aerojet driver. But as I've said so many times, I don't think there's really any bad equipment out there right now. It seems like all the manufacturers are really making really quality golf clubs, and everybody kind of has their own idea of you know, of how they distribute weight in the club and where the CG is and so on and so forth. But the Aerojet driver by Cobra has really been getting a lot of buzz, and it's on the Golf Digest gold list again this year. So it'll be fun to catch up with Bobby and find out what Cobra has to offer.
No doubt. Always top of the line stuff. And Bobby's great to talk to.
So that pretty much wraps up what we're going to talk about today on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. And I guess I would say, Scott, you know, we would welcome questions from the audience. Is there any way that that they can do that through our website?
Absolutely. Send them to Sactown Sports, and we'll definitely get them for future weeks.
That's good. Good to know. So the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. We'll take a break for a couple of messages, and we will be right back with Tom Morton right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, all. I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh, and a good friend of the show is back. Always learn something when Tom Morton, PGA Director of Player Development at Hagen Oaks, is with us. Tom is certainly one of the best teachers around, but has his finger on the pulse. And Tommy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me again, guys.
Absolutely. You know, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air about the USGA and RNA having gotten together and decided that that they're going to listen to Jack Nicklaus, who's been saying for years the ball is too long, and now they want to. Well, they haven't officially done so, but they're talking about rolling back the golf ball, which is to say that you know, the golf ball will be manufactured a little bit differently, so that off the driver it may fly about 15 yards less than it does now. Boy, this sets up all kinds of issues with regard to what the amateurs might play if it's a different ball, whether the ball manufacturers want to produce two different balls, whether the tour players want to play a different ball. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So with that introduction and leaving you a wide open path, what do you think about that?
Yeah, my first reaction is, like a lot of things the USGA and RNA do, is sometimes I refer to them as the directors of fun prevention. and you know, they are there, certainly. You know, they're the governing for, you know, rules of the game. And I think all too often they view themselves as like the protectors of the game. And there are many, many organizations that are all involved in the game of golf that matter. You know, PGA, LPGA, even all like, you know, First Tee, and you could name just piles of them. They all matter in a big part of the game. And the majority of them, if not all of them that I've heard, are against this because, you know, the 99.999% of the people that play the game and really support the game and make it what it is financially don't want it. And so these rules shouldn't be made based on the, you know, infantile percentage of the tour player or the people that are, you know, in that stratosphere. And, you know, when you start unraveling the layers of this, it's not just, oh, you change the ball and, you know, it goes a little shorter and then we're fine. What that's going to require from the manufacturers, if this were to go through, is the tour players, you know, sort of maximize their equipment with what, you know, the ball and they work together in harmony and unison. If they change the ball, the tour players are going to have to completely change what equipment they're using in regard to the makeup of them and things that happen with them. I mean, a good example is years ago, we were up at Band and Dunes, and we actually ran into, I believe it was Kevin Streelman, a tour player who was up there playing. And we looked in his bag, and he had some actual wood clubs, and he was going, you know, I feel like this golf course should be played, you know, old school. And so we see him on the range, and he's hitting these wood clubs with, you know, kind of updated range balls, and the balls are just falling out of the sky because they don't support one another, right? He needs a super high spinning ball to play with that wood. And so it's going to make manufacturers have to have different clubs for the tour players, different from the amateurs, which then they'd need to do research and development on those and make sure that they're the best. Well, now the cost of that to manufacturers is crazy. Who's going to pay for all that, right? It's going to all funnel down to the golfer themselves. I mean, this is just, you know, a small part of the whole equation.
Well, and the interesting thing, I mean, the USGA controls one of them, right? And we're talking about the USGA and the RNA, right? So we'd be talking about the British Open, the Open, you know, and the US Open at that point. I mean, unless the PGA were to adopt this, I mean, you would still be looking at two different sets of clubs for just, you know, basically two events, unless the Masters were to join on with this as well. And that's what even seems to make it more peculiar.
Yeah, I mean, the USGA might, you know, do it for the U.S. amateur events and so on, but are they going to do it for the U.S. junior? Are they going to do it for the U.S. women's and girls junior? I mean, who knows what this all means? We don't have any ideas yet, but to me, you know, I'm the first one to say, yes, are like clubs and balls making the ball go further and their distance go up? Of course. I mean, and the golf ball is a big part of that equation. There's no doubt about it. However, so what? I think I was telling you guys earlier, I was looking at the top 20 drivers on tour, comparing it to the top 20 in the FedEx Cup standing. There's three players in the top 20 in driving distance that are in the top 20 of the FedEx Cup standings right now. Does distance matter? Of course it does. However, it doesn't automatically mean that you're going to be one of the greats on tour. There's a lot more to it. And so to me, it's a kind of a knee-jerk reaction. I don't think it's necessary. And by the way, you know, maybe you guys feel differently, but I love watching them bomb it off the tee. I love watching golf nowadays. And, you know, the best players are still winning, right? So what if they shoot 2,500 par? It's fun to watch that. And, you know, home runs in baseball, you know, the different rules and different sports that are happening to make it more enjoyable to watch. Great.
It's I agree with you. Well, go ahead, Frank.
I'm sorry, Scott, but I was going to say, you know, we're talking more, you know, how traditionalists view the game and how the new players are coming into the game and what their reaction is. And yes, hitting the ball really far is really kind of exciting. But the purist would say, well, they've taken the shot making out of the game. They're not bending these shots to meet the fairways. They're just going over the trees, and wherever it lands, they'll find a way to get it to the green. Well, that may be true, and maybe that's what today's game is. And golf, like anything else, you know, has to transition and grow, I guess.
Is today's NBA not different than years ago NBA, right? Of course it is. And all the three-point shooting and so on and so forth. It doesn't make it necessarily worse. It's just different.
Yeah. And I think also to a point that was made a little bit earlier, it's just, you know, the average golfer likes to use the same equipment as the stars, you know? And so like when you can play with Tiger Woods golf ball, that's pretty cool. Or just have the same set of equipment. I think that's one of the real, real things that makes golf special, that it's really, the rules apply to everybody everywhere. And when you separate it out like this, that's another kind of demarcation that I don't know. I personally don't like to see.
You know, for recreational players, you know, I'm thinking about when we play, Scott. I mean, you know, you bomb it off the tee, and you know, I'll hit a shot, and you will blow it past me. You know, sometimes 30, 40 yards, and I'm thinking, gee, I'd like to hit it as far as Scott. Or you know, now I think about this new ball, gee, but you know, maybe Scott would, you know, our driving distances would be closer. Well, that takes out the spirit of the game, you know, because where our games might even up is around the greens, where, you know, my short game, because I don't hit it far, might be a little sharper. So that's what makes the game exciting is not only, you know, where you go after tee, but how we get to the green and how we get it in the hole.
Yeah, and again, this isn't like the first time the USGA has done, you know, things like this. It's, you know, I think somewhat similar to when they took away anchoring. And, if you looked at what was going on tour, there were a few people that were anchoring, but they weren't winning all the time. You had, I think at the time, maybe an Adam Scott, you know, Bernhard Langer, certainly on the Champions Tour. And there were a few people that were doing it, but it wasn't like everybody was doing it and it was causing scores to go down rapidly, but they took it away. And to be honest, as I've seen on the, you know, kind of the grassroots level of the game, it's hurt the game. I had a student who, you know, anchored, and it was because of he, you know, had the shakes as he was getting older. And then when he anchored, it was better. And, you know, I told him, well, why don't you just continue to do it? You're not playing in any major championships. And he said, my buddies, you know, kind of poke fun at me and tell me I'm cheating. And so he stopped doing it, and it made it less fun for him to play golf. And I think there's a little bit of that goes on at the local level. You know, the comment of, oh, just do it anyway. Well, no, they get ribbed by their pals, and it's, you know, they feel like they're not abiding by the rules of the game. And again, our whole job here to make golf more fun, and again, open up it for everyone, not doing things that limit that.
The last time I looked, by the way, Bernhard Langer's won a lot of Champions Tours since the anchoring rule went away.
Well, the funny thing about the rule is, if you really dive into it, it says something to the effect of intent to anchor. So, you know, I have a feeling there's people that are still semi-anchoring, but I'm not intending to.
Yeah.
You know, as we go along, there will be a divide here on this subject as well. There'll be those that figure, well, yes, I agree. Let's make the golf ball shorter. And those on the other side that, you know, say, I want to play the same ball as the tour players, and I want to, you know, see if I can hit it anywhere near as far as they do. You know, it just sets up a competition between a couple of groups of people that don't have the whole story, as you kind of suggested in the middle. Because what does it do to the ball manufacturers? What does it do to to the equipment manufacturers, and so on and so forth? So, you know, it's certainly not a subject that we're going to be able to decide definitively today what we think that the USGA and the RNA and their royal presence ought to do, but it's certainly fun for discussion. I noticed early this morning that a headline that Rory McIlroy is in favor of bringing back the ball. Didn't get a chance to read the story, so I'm not quite sure what the basis is, but this discussion will continue until a ruling is finally made. And when do you think that might happen, Tom?
I think they said something like in a few months, you know, they're going to take in all the information from the major, you know, sports organizations that all have a, you know, stake in this. And my hope is that they really do listen. My feeling from where I sit in the industry is that they don't often listen to the other folks in the industry too often. But I hope they do and take it all in. And then I think I just decision probably late summer, fall will probably be made. But again, I think they said even if something happens, it won't get enacted. Maybe was it 26 or something of that nature?
Well, it's an interesting subject, as I said, and we won't come to any conclusion today, but I appreciate your expertise. Normally when we have you on the show, it's to help us with our games, to talk about, you know, things we might be doing wrong or things we could do better and as you say, make the game more fun. So let's take a little break and we'll come back and talk about a couple of those right here on Sactown Sports 1140. You're listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back to the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Our guest is Tom Morton, PGA Director of Player Development, and we have completely discussed the whole notion of the ball rollback by the RNA and USGA and come to no conclusion other than we all have an opinion. But when we start talking about things we can conclude and things we can help players with, Tom, it's always great to have you on the show because, as I've said so many times, I learn things or I remember things that I'd forgotten when you bring them up. But, you know, we're certainly it seems like it's going to rain forever. And And for many people, they want to continue to play. Let's talk about the challenges of playing either in the rain or, you know, right after the rain. What's the ground like? You know, what do we have to do differently? Do we have to do anything differently? And what can we do to continue to enjoy the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think getting people out there in tough conditions, we certainly don't see nearly as many golfers, but it can be fun in some respects. And like a lot of sports, it's the equipment, as we've been talking about the ball, but the equipment matters. And so if you're deciding you're going to play in some wet weather, you know, whether it's rain gloves or, you know, a good quality rain suit or waterproof shoes and that kind of thing, certainly add to a lot of the enjoyment of the experience to make sure, you know, you're staying somewhat dry. But in regard to actually playing the game, you know, you want to make sure when you're out there, the lie of the ball is a, you know, such a huge factor on, you know, hitting a decent shot. And I hope people are playing, you know, lift clean in place during times like this. It's certainly pretty wet out there, and a lot of the golf courses aren't able to get out and mow as frequently and so on and so forth. So really pay attention to the lies. But also when you get water between the ball and the, you know, your club face, it spins less. And so it tends to, you know, come off maybe a little bit hotter and not stop in the green as much if the greens are, you know, reasonably dry. Understanding kind of how that ball is going to come off, I think, is important. And making sure that oftentimes with the rain, we get a little more windy days. So making sure that, you know, we might have a little wider stance, a little bigger base so that we stay on balance. You know, one of the biggest reasons golfers don't hit it square in the face is they're getting off balance a lot. And certainly when it's wet, you know, spikeless shoes can be maybe not the greatest option as well, but making sure you're getting that good solid ground into the ground so when you do swing, you're stable.
If you're playing strictly by the rules, let's talk about the standing water rule. And let's also talk about what you do in a bunker if your ball is in the bunker and the bunker is not drained yet.
Yeah, so in the bunker, you know, it is a hazard. You are allowed to obviously move it out of the standing water, but you'd have to keep it in the bunker. So it's about finding the nearest point of relief, no closer to the hole, hopefully that is dry. And then you can place the ball in there so that it, you know, is in a condition somewhat like it would have been had it not gone in the water. So that's kind of the rule on that. If high bunker is underwater, then, you know, you are able to remove it out of there. But most of the time, there clearly are some high places in the bunker that aren't. And so if you're in the fairway and you hit it into water, kind of the rule of thumb is kind of if you're stepping down and the water kind of comes up a bit on your shoes, you should probably get a drop from that area. And again, it's kind of nearest point of relief, you know, club length stance to make sure that you're out of that condition before you drop and go.
I think, you know, when you mentioned it, it can be exciting. It can be fun to play in that. I've always felt when I finished a round, when it's either raining or occasional rain is, you know, that that time you spend at the 19th hole with your buddies, it's we got through this together. You know, we conquered this thing. We had some fun. And Scott, we've played in some conditions that sometimes afterwards I wonder, why did we do that?
Well, we played some wind conditions for sure. I thought we were literally going to be blown off the course. There's no doubt. But that I love the challenge of that, Tom. To me, it's all part of the game. And, you know, I think the one thing you mentioned that's really important, I think the toughest thing in playing in the weather, at least as far as I'm concerned, is just the grip with your club. So I think really having rain gloves is really important because there's nothing more fun than getting into your backswing, losing the grip on your club and that affecting your shot in such a negative way.
Yeah, obviously that's the only connection to the club. So having a good hold of that is certainly important, and definitely rain gloves. And I do keep a pair in my bag just in case I get in those conditions. And that's, you know, the nice thing about that is I kind of have, as I've gotten older and whatnot, the umbrella to me is more of a pain, windy and whatnot. So I would just sort of ditch that idea and throw on the rain suit, throw on rain gloves, and I'll let your clubs get wet because the rain gloves work well when things are wet, and just go get it.
Let's assume that at some point in our lives, it's going to stop raining. We're actually going to get back to conditions that we enjoy on the golf course. Let's talk about chipping or pitching around the green. Tom, when let's say I'm, you know, 10, 20 yards off the green. If the flag is in the front or in the middle or in the back, I think most people just kind of reach for whatever that club is that they tend to use around the greens and hit the same shot. You've talked many times about the difference in pitching to areas around the green, depending on where the flag is. Can you kind of run over that? Because I think that's, you know, that really will help people's games and getting the ball closer to the flag.
Yeah. So, I mean, a big part of being good around the green is making good decisions and sort of the tactical part of the game and, you know, what things to do at the right time. And, you know, I think all too often people are married to that high lofted wedge in their bag, whether it's 60 or 58 kind of degree, and they just use it no matter what. And, you know, a big key to being great around the green is learning to control trajectory of the golf ball. And so we have lots of clubs in our bag, and, you know, changing loft around the green can certainly help trajectory. I think especially for the average player, the last shot you want to pull out is the super, you know, high flop lob shot, because that brings in more issues and, you know, brings in the opportunity to probably hit the skull or the chunk and some different things. And as we've, you know, joked about, I like Hank Haney's term, we want to limit, the average golfer needs to limit the two chip. We need to be able to chip at one time and get it on the surface of the green. And if most of the average golfers did that, they would save strokes. And so oftentimes, you know, rather than thinking, oh, I need to get this thing to 2-3 feet, how about you get it to 6 to 8 feet? And I bet if they did that more often, they'd be a better golfer and save strokes. So use more clubs in your bag, really understanding, you know, twofold, the club face. So learning to control, you know, and understand where it is, open, square, closed, because that can really influence what the ball does. Understanding sort of the angle of approach of the club into the, you know, golf ball, whether it's a little steeper, whether it's a little shallower based on the lie you have, whether it's, you know, sitting down in the rough, sitting up in the rough, or on that tight lie, you know, those kind of things have massive impact on one short game. And the last one that rarely I hear golfers think about or talk about is one kind of tempo and timing in regard to their short game swings. You know, really being good at controlling the tempo and timing of short swings around the green really helps someone become pretty proficient.
You know, you've come up with a couple of really good thoughts over the course of being on the show. One of them being always shoot for the center of the green, because that gives you the flexibility or the opportunity to miss one side or the other. And this today, just saying, just get it on the green somewhere. Getting it on the green, you know, may not be the prettiest shot or the shot you had in your mind, but again, now you're putting and you have a better chance of making that shot.
Definitely. And, you know, even if you talk about the putter, if you're, you know, a lot of courses mow out the fringes, you know, pretty wide and deep. And just because you might be 4, 5, 8 yards off the green, if you're on, if it's closely mown area and it's in reasonable condition, putt it. Like, you're going to be way more likely to get a decent shot putting than you are chipping. And so, you know, do that more often. And again, that's likely to get on the green and less chance to hit the shot that you're having to chip again.
And you'll find tour players doing that as well. So, I mean, if it's good enough for them, it's got to be good enough for us. Tom Morton, PGA Director of Player Development at Hagen Oaks, thanks so much for being with us. I sound like a broken record saying how much we learn every time you're with us. Appreciate your time, your expertise, and keep hitting it in the fairway.
As always, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, back for more with the Golf to Go Radio Hour right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues on Sactown Sports 1140. Hello, everyone. I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh. And Scott, we're going to talk equipment here today.
I can't wait to do it.
Bobby Naima is the NorCal Cobra Puma golf rep. Bobby's been on the show before and always learned something from him. Bobby, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. You know, when the Golf Digest hot list comes out, I always kind of scroll through that and see who's getting all the recognition. And And it's been a great year for Cobra. You got to be pretty excited at all the gold awards you got.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really excited about the driver, and I think we have something special for this year. And can't wait to tell you guys more about it.
You know, the name of the driver is really intriguing. It's called the Aerojet, and certainly here in Northern California, that's a name that will resonate with people. Having been a huge employer and someone involved in the rocket business for so many years. So the Aerojet driver is your newest offering for 2023, and it's as I mentioned, Golf Digest Hot List Award winner. Tell me what excites you about the Aerojet driver, Bobby.
Yeah, no, I think you kind of summed it up pretty good when you talked about Aerojet like a rocket. I mean, that's really what we were trying to do with the design of this thing, make it as fast as possible for an array of golfers, guys who swing it 120, 100, 125, all the way down to, 65 miles an hour, right? We have a commercial that I actually saw the other day on TV. It was pretty funny. So it had Ricky Fowler, Gary Woodland, obviously tour players, in the gym with their trainers, pumping them up like, okay, you got to, lift these weights and get all strong or whatever it is. And then they go to like an amateur golfer, and the amateur golfer is like, okay, what I got to do to, get the speed? And, Ricky hands him the driver, and this is it, just hit it. So what we're trying to do with Aerojet is design something that's more aerodynamic, so you can swing it around your body faster, right? And this is, like I said, for, some of the fastest guys in the world and, just your average Sunday golfer. So that's really the main design. I mean, with the name, it's all about moving the club faster around your body.
That's a great feat of engineering to be able to swing a club that Ricky Fowler does, and I was going to say and have the same results, which only in my dreams, but to have results that'd be satisfactory, I guess, is probably the best way to put it.
Totally. Within the driver, we have three different models. So we'll start with the LS head. So the LS is going to be designed for people who are trying to have a little bit less backspin. Right. Weight's going to be forward in this driver. We have a technology in all three heads called the Power Bridge weighting system. And the way it works, it's essentially connects the bottom of the driver east to west without being suspended on the bottom, and allows the face to flex no matter where you hit it on the face. So the more flexibility you have in the face, obviously the faster the ball is going to come off. Like I said, that the LS head is really going to be designed for, the guys who are trying to create less backspin. We have the standard Aerojet, which is going to be maximum forgiveness, maximum ball speed. So it kind of sits in the middle of those two drivers or of the three drivers. And then the third driver is going to be the Aerojet Max. And, that's going to be for the player who's trying to, start to hit a little bit of draw or prevent a slice. That it's pretty incredible to see what that third driver does for people who are really trying to correct the left to right miss. So within those three drivers, we really feel like we have a package that gonna get you more speed, better shot shape, and ultimately just hit longer drives.
I think that ability, the technology that's available now to help soften that left to right shot shape, which so many weekend players have, is maybe one of the greatest things that the designers have come up with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we talk about fitting so much, and it's so important, to get into your golf shops or somewhere with a simulator, a launch monitor, TrackMan, whatever it may be, and really get fit for one of these things, because the technology, like you said, Frank, it's out there. A lot of people, the days of just, popping into the golf shop and just grabbing something off the rack and hoping it's the right one for you, it's just kind of silly at this point. Get in there, go get fit. There's every year we're coming out with new technology, and I think this year is going to be a good year for us in driver, just with the three models and the ability to really dial something in for you.
It was nice seeing Ricky Fowler this past weekend to sort of be getting a handle on his game. He certainly did not win the tournament, but it was fun kind of watching him, especially on 17, which he seems to have owned that hole over the years.
Absolutely. I mean, Ricky, he's such a big part of our company, our brand. And when he's playing well, he's just fun to watch. I mean, he's an exciting player. That 17th hole has kind of been, you know, from the time where he won it in the playoff to even yesterday. I don't know if he made the putt on 17. I think he had a really close one. I think he just missed the putt.
Yeah, it just slipped out. Yeah.
Yeah, just slipped out. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a ton of fun watching him play good again. And we're really excited for his season. And I think he's close to qualifying for the Masters. So we're really excited about it.
Well, I know one of the questions Scott might have about your driver is, does it come in left-handed style?
Well, I
absolutely.
Can't, Bobby, first of all, good to talk to you. I can't relate when you're talking about this right to left, because you know everything I'm hitting is going the exact opposite from you guys. So making sure, yeah, they are equipped for lefties. I'm sure they are. You know, it's interesting. You do need to get fitted, right? Because now we're talking about subtleties within three excellent drivers and to make sure that you get the right one, right?
100%. I mean, you know, we talk about things like carbon fiber and perimeter weighting all the time. And, you know, I'll take a quick second and just really describe or kind of tell like the player who doesn't know really the reason for using carbon fiber and drivers. I mean, it looks cool, it looks fast, but really the main reason is when you use carbon fiber over titanium, right, it allows you to, the driver becomes lighter. So with that extra weight that you have, you're able to make the driver more forgiving, more fast, or design a driver that meets a specific spec for a specific player. So, you know, you're going to see a ton of carbon fiber in all three of these drivers. So like the LS head, the low spin head, right? That's going to have all the weight forward in the driver. So for someone who is trying to bring down launch and bring down spin, having weight forward and low in the driver is really going to help that player. Now, conversely, we go to the other side of the spectrum for someone who struggles, you know, hitting the ball straight and misses it to the right for a right-handed golfer, or Scott, like you, missing it to the left for a left-handed golfer. We have weight where we can put on that side of the driver. So essentially what you're trying to do is you're moving the center of gravity towards the heel, and that's really going to help with the twisting of the face at impact. So you're not going to have that big right miss or that big left miss with the driver. Also within the driver is going to have like the cog settings, right? So a lot of people, when they get their driver, they don't tinker with it. They just kind of leave it in that standard position, whether they've missed it right for years or whatever it may be. I really suggest, like, if you aren't going to get fit, or even if you do get fit, play with your cog setting, you know, put it in the draw setting, add loft, take down loft, test it, see what it does. I mean, it's really incredible when you move those settings around and play with the weights, you'll see the difference in the shot shape, and you know, you might really be pleased with the results.
I think that's a great idea. We are, I don't want to use all our time talking about the driver, but you know, it certainly is a worthy subject, but tell me about the technology that you've got in the fairways and the hybrids also with the Aerojet as well.
Yeah. So the fairways are pretty much streamlined through the driver. So all the technology that we talked about earlier, the speed, the aerodynamic shape is going to be consistent through the fairway wood line. There's going to be three models in the fairway wood line as well. The LS, which is a little bit deeper face, you know, I think it's a really, really good fairway wood for players who like to hit it off the tee. Maybe, you know, they hit their driver too far on certain holes. I mean, we're not going to have many people out there who do that. But for someone who likes to hit fairway wood off the tee, I think the LS model is fantastic. The middle model, the standard Aerojet, amazing all-around fairway wood. That's the one I play. Very versatile. Great off the turf, great off the tee. And then the Max Head is, again, designed for the player who you know, maybe struggles a little bit launching his three wood high enough, or his or her three wood high enough. Or again, for the player who, you know, tends to miss it to the right for right-handed golfer or left, they have the two weights. You can kind of switch them around, and that'll really help with that shot shape correction.
We're talking with Bobby Naima, the NorCal Cobra Puma golf rep. In your irons, your Aerojet, which is kind of a game improvement iron, took gold in the Golf Digest Hot List. But you also have the King Tour iron, which is a forged iron, another gold winner. Tell us about those, Bobby.
Yeah, no, I'll start with Aerojet. So, you know, Aerojet iron is really designed for distance. You know, this thing, if you're looking, if you've, you know, over the last couple of years lost a little bit of distance with your irons and you're looking for something new to, you know, get back to where you were, I highly recommend giving the Aerojet a try. You know, it's going to be designed for a high single digit all the way up to a 20-25 handicap for the player who's looking for more distance. And what I love about this iron, you know, I fit a few people already for this thing. And a lot of times when you get into this category of, you know, super game improvement or distance, you hear a lot of not necessarily complaints, but you kind of look at it, they're really thick soles and really thick top lines and a lot of offset. The engineers, the design team did a really good job on this thing, making it look sleek, making it look fast, while still keeping the forgiveness attributes of an iron designed for this type of player. It's going to come in the variable length and the one length iron. So we're going to have both options, but if you're looking for distance, definitely give Aerojet a try. Now moving on to the King Tour iron, you know, this is going to be a forged head. I would say this is designed for, you know, a plus two handicap all the way up to a 10 handicap. When these irons first came out, I think I saw them last year at our sales meeting back in August. I mean, I looked at them and I was just like, wow, these things are beautiful. You know, it's kind of funny, you know, Ricky notoriously has been known for playing the smallest blades that we make. Really some of the smallest blades. I think they've pushed the envelope and made us making really, really small blades. But he's been in these things since I believe Napa, last year, and he's had a ton of success. And I just think it's pretty unique when you find an iron that is really designed for, up to a 10 handicap to see a tour player using it. We've had success with a few other, tour pros who aren't on our staff, with these irons. So we're really excited about these as well.
I don't know about you, Scott. When he said plus two, I just kind of tuned out there for a second, but
I just let him talk because it's a world that I don't live in. So
you'd be surprised. Give these things a shot.
I want to, definitely. I'm looking forward to swinging them. Because you're right, Ricky's been playing great lately.
Yeah, he's been good.
Bobby, your putter line is quite unique in that they are 3D printed putters. Tell us what that really means and what that does for the technology.
Yeah, well, first, I mean, when you're using 3D printing as a way of manufacturing clubs, you're able to do it pretty fast. So, you know, we have like Kyle Berkshire, for example, world long drive champion. He's testing all kinds of stuff, trying to figure out how to hit it further and so on and so forth. And when he comes back to us with feedback and we're building, you know, a driver for him, you know, once you come up with the concept and then you build a cast and you send it to, you know, we're overseas for them to build it. And then it gets back here. I mean, we're talking, you know, 3-4-5 month process. When you're able to 3D print in Carlsbad, you're able to get him something in a week. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So when it comes to putters, I mean, it's kind of the same concept of what I was talking about with carbon fiber and drivers, right? When you're able to 3D print something, you're able to make it, at least the way we're doing it for the putters, is you're able to make the chassis, the body lighter. So you're able to, you know, take that extra weight that you would have lost if you use a different material and re-engineer it in a sense that you're making the putter as forgiving as possible. Right. So for us, we have three core models in the 3D printed line. And the first one I got kind of go over, it's called the Agira. So the Agira is going to be our largest footprint in putter in the 3D printed line. And by using that 3D printing, that lattice design, we're able to put four tungsten weights in the four corners of the putter. So we have one in the front left, front right, back left. So when you're making that swing, when you're coming into impact with that golf ball, having those weight, having the weight in the corner is going to, increase accuracy with your putter. It's going to make your putter more forgiving. Does that make sense?
I like more forgiving. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's going to be true of all the 3D printed putters that we make. So you're going to have extra weight in the corners of the putter to make the actual putter more forgiving. You're going to be able to hit your intended start line more often. Another technology our putter has is Sick Face. And I think we may have went over this a little bit last time we talked last year, but just a quick review. The Sick Face technology is going to be a descending face loft. So the top of the putter starts with 4 degrees of loft and kind of progressively comes down to 1 degree of loft. So the idea is, by doing that, if you hit it high on the face, low on the face, you're going to get the same launch angle and ideally the same ball speed. So your speed control becomes a lot better while using Sick Face.
You know, what I love about the technology is that I don't have to be an expert. I'm going to leave that up to the designers at Cobra. And I'm just going to go for more forgiving and play the irons that a plus two does. It's a great day in my mind. How about you, Scott?
It sounds good to me. I like that concept a lot, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, it is really incredible. I mean, we're really pushing the boundaries when it comes to forgiveness, playability, looks. You know, that's one of those things. It's like, you know, as a rep, you know, I can pretty much play whatever I want. I have access to whatever I want, I should say. And, you know, a lot of times I'll see like these new blades come out or, you know, whatever it may be. I'm like, oh, that looks awesome. But, you know, that's a little bit aggressive for me. And yeah, the blade, the true blade, you know, I definitely shouldn't be playing a true blade. You know, I'm going to lose distance. I'm going to lose forgiveness and whatnot. But, you know, that we do make products that look amazing, that, you know, so things that I would really want to play that are forgiving. And that I think that the 3D printed putters and that new King Tour iron is a perfect example of what I'm talking about.
Unlike the game of golf where we can have a leisurely afternoon, the world of the Golf to Go radio show has time limits. And unfortunately, we've probably spent more time than our sponsors are going to get excited about. So Bobby, I'm going to cut here for a message, but I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show again and getting us up to date on Cobra Golf and continued success in the new year. We appreciate everything you guys are doing.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, and look forward to talking to you guys soon.
Bye-bye. And that wraps up another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. My thanks to our guest, Tom Morton, PGA, Director of Player Development at the Haken Oaks Golf Complex, and Bobby Naima, the Northern California rep for Cobra Puma Golf. Thank you to my co-host, Scott Marsh, and thank you all for listening. We're back next week with more on the Golf to Go Radio Hour.